the trees, damn them. They had no special attacks, just physical damage and speed. About half of them had bows and black arrows, which probably land you with a curse on a hit. We'll have to be very careful and make sure the priests keep their eyes open and cleanse any cursed players. The vamps were waiting 100 meters from the glade and had a boss with them, the sergeant. Level 200, nothing difficult at the first glance. If you discount the regeneration buff, it restores 2% of total hit points every 5 seconds. The second barricade, a more serious one this time, came 100 meters further out. 3 level 300 elementals, 5 plus 350 mages, and 1 boss, concealed by black mist. According to his properties, he was some sort of lieutenant, level 400. There was no information on his race or abilities. While I was logged out, I tried to look him up on all available databases. Nothing. The elementals are interesting, too. There was fire, water, and an earth one. There should have also been an air one, but it was probably somewhere else at the time. They have no special abilities, but they're no pushovers, because these three stand very close to each other, and we won't be able to pull them one by one. You'll have to figure out how to bring them down. The third cordon wasn't even a cordon, but the camp of the final boss, and is 200 meters further out. There we had another mist-covered boss, a general of some kind, level 450, and 6 necromancers, who were busy summoning the ash. There was nothing else there. Catch the video and the stats that I managed to get off the mobs. When ash started to form, I tried to interrupt it, knowing where this was going. But as soon as I came closer, the general took me out straight away. Just 3 hits, and I was pushing daisies. He only used a physical damage attack, so while I was under cloak, I managed to warn you about the ash. That's it, I think. Plinto, said Do Not Punic a couple of minutes later, after he reviewed the info my fighter sent. Listen, I'm lost for words. How did you do this? On some level, I agreed with Don. It made for engrossing viewing. To watch Plinto jump from tree to tree, Tarzan-like, all the while managing to assess his surroundings, not allowing the trees to sway, and looking through the properties of each mob that came into view.
"Man, as soon as the rest of the clan gets here," Plinto turned to me, ignoring the question, "I'll take charge of them. I see that you have 2 warriors and 1 rogue, all of them around level 20. I won't touch the druid, but these guys, it's time they stop faffing around and start leveling up properly. I'll take it upon myself to ensure that happens."
"Then wait for them to turn up. Should be about an hour, and you can begin straight away. Later, you can put me through my paces as well."
"Sure, no problem. You covered 120 meters of the rogue obstacle course on your first attempt," chuckled Plinto. "No going easy on you with that record to beat."
112, I corrected him, but Plinto was no longer listening. He'd stealthed and started roaming around the glade. "We'll have to give our scouts a good talking to," said Anastaria the moment he left us. "Who would have thought that a douchebag could provide such a thorough scouting report? Levels? Descriptions? Did you see that on the second minute he even pointed out the movement trajectories?" she said to Do Not Punic.
"Yeah," muttered my second advisor, looking somewhat at a loss. "This day is just full of wonders. Man, maybe you should take me into your clan as well. Just to complete the set. We could invite someone from the Heirs of the Titans, and that'd be it. All the leading clans of Malabar will have transferred one leading player to the Sea Thistle's clan. It's mind-boggling. Stacy, how many first kills do you have? About 40? Plinto should have about a dozen. Mayan has one as well. Sea Thistle's is light years ahead now. There's also some NPC sitting in Mayan's tent. Slight. Will your leaving Phoenix affect your taking part in the quest? He suddenly asked the girl.
No, was Anastaria's firm reply. I joined up of my own accord. No one paid for me, so I don't owe anyone anything. Let's decide what to do now. I propose we start with a brainstorming session.
Before we start, I'd like to bring something to your attention. I already knew about the three bosses, but Plinto didn't say anything about the Lord of the Fallen, who was shouting announcements to the whole glade after the ash hit. So there should be a fourth cordon, even though it was never scouted. The attack plan was for the most part fleshed out by Anastaria and Do Not Punic, while I simply stood by, acting as a litmus test of sorts. If I went red, if I started to become unsettled, the plan was a bad one. If I stayed silent, the plan was good and worth considering. A worthy and solid role of a frog in a jar used to predict the weather. At least they weren't intent on making me croak.
On the whole, our knowledge about this territory is sparse. I finally heard Anastaria utter words I could easily understand.
All these formations, raid add-ons, saves, pots, pre-pots, flasks, masks, casks.
In the 15 years of the game, not a single quest was discovered here. There is a map made by Newtonovich, but he drew it from atop a griffin, so it isn't much help to us. I found nothing about Dark Forest Guardians, and nothing pointing to scenarios dealing with the cursing of the entire forest.
Same here. Just the map and lots of unexplored territory. You know, I had a bit of a think. There's something that immediately jumps out in all of this. Why on earth is a player who is hunted by the entire Dark Legion clan roaming around thousands of kilometers away from Anhurs, all the way in the Dark Forest, which supposedly doesn't contain a single quest? And the place isn't exactly bursting with resources either, if you don't take the Guardian's Glade into account. And then this mysterious shaman, who's been dubbed a Son of the Dragon, turns up and offers us a quest from a place that isn't supposed to have any quests at all. To top it all off, in the space of just an hour, he gets to recruit the second and the third highest level players on the continent. Guys, is there something you'd like to fill me in on, perhaps? It's a bit difficult to construct a chain of reasoning on the basis of incomplete data.
It's tough to deal with people who have a habit of using their heads instead of their emotions. Stacy cracked me right from the start, and Do Not Punic, too. And here was me thinking that I was terribly unreadable and mysterious.
Right. So you don't feel like sharing, then?
The Azure Dragons player summed up a few moments later, then looked at Anastaria, pursed his lips, and smiled.
No, I really must take some lessons from you. You probably knew what was up even before Sea Thistle's. Did the small fry get his hands on some other quest? And you're not going to tell me anything about it, are you?
Do Not Punic froze for a minute.
Let's play a guessing game, then. The Emperors can be ruled out as the source. They're new and need at least a week before they assume their roles properly. The princess? I'm not sure. It seems highly improbable. That leaves only the High Priestess. Judging by what happened in Beatwick, Mayan has leveled up in attractiveness with her almost as far as 100. And then there was the poaching of the 3 fighters by Phoenix, most likely in order to take charge of a quest. No, there just isn't enough information. Raster wouldn't have taken players into the clan if they didn't come with some benefits. That means it wasn't Mayan who had the quest, but the priest. He was the first to be accepted into Phoenix, and the others just hopped on the bandwagon. The level difference is just too big. Then it could be those with whom... Yes, of course. Mayan is a prisoner, and he probably spent time running around with these 3 when he was a normal player. But they ditched him and decided to offer the quest to Phoenix. How nice of them. What can I say? And you? Do not Punic looked at Anastaria. You're a known champion of justice. That's it. The puzzle comes together. No, dealing with someone who knows how to use their head isn't tough. It's downright dangerous. The slightest gesture can be used to read you and prepare 10 different ways of responding. Perhaps Do Not Punic has a point, and I should take a couple of lessons from Anastaria while there's time. You were saying something about joining my clan. I tried to concentrate and forced out a chuckle. Let's talk it over. I'm ready to hear your conditions. I think not, laughed Do Not Punic. Not much point in me crossing over. Phoenix has that quest now. Making logical deductions based on incomplete information is an unforgivable mistake when it comes to this player, volunteered Anastaria, pointing to me. As long as I've known him, he's had the ability to respond to any sound logical argument with 1 or even 2 completely illogical actions or quests. So Mayan is right, Don. You should think about coming over.
This isn't a clan, but a den of nutjobs, Eric panted out as he finished running his 10th lap around the glade. Plinto had called for a break, so all 3 players dropped to the ground. Like hell I'll do any more dying. I'll write a message to the developers and say that as soon as the clan is sent for respawn, its head completely flips out and starts doing crazy things, and ask them to give me complete immunity to every kind of damage. Perhaps that might get you to see reason. A little while later, if my swearing filter had been turned on, the first phrase I would have heard uttered by Klutzer when he came back from the Greylands and saw the sea thistle's emblem above Plinto and Anastaria might have sounded something like this.
What the flying snail is going on here? We'll all quack a duck from such a cluster bunnies. This is total bunny hop. Noble lady socks take you.
When, in a couple of words, I'd explained to the agitated players why we were now 3 players down, but also 2 players up, pointed out the first kill bonuses and other advantages in protection from PKers, everyone seemed to calm down. That lasted all of 2 minutes, until Plinto came up to us, formed an additional training group, and got my fighters to run laps around the glade. He'd explained to me that it was high time these guys leveled up in agility, strength, and stamina, and that anyone not wanting to level up would have his ass mercilessly kicked. It is impossible to die within a training group, so when the guys were about to protest, Plinto's knives reduced their hit points to 1, and all arguments stopped. It became suddenly clear that increasing your stats was extremely important,
and the clan leader had told them not to slack in any case. By the time the last players arrived, Ants in the Pansa and Barcina, the second attempt to leave the Guardian's Glade had commenced. There were, again, 3 10-strong groups, each with its own support group, although there were some changes to the Phoenix-led 10. An Azure Dragon's healer replaced Anastaria, while she remained by my side. She wanted to have nothing to do with Hellfire and Ekeler, and they weren't too eager to spend time with her either. Plinto continued to make my fighters run around the glade, making it clear that he had no intention of taking part in the battle should one commence. To his credit, glancing at Leidy, Klutzer, and Eric's stats, I saw that in just an hour they increased their agility by +3, strength by +2, and stamina by +4. Plinto didn't limit himself to running. There were jumps, rolls, sprints, and rolls again. And it should be noted that as soon as the first leveling up took place, any grumbling ceased. The result could be clearly seen and felt, which meant that it was worth the sweat.
"Vamps spotted! 3 of them! Moving fast! No bows!"
A message from the central group of 10 came up in the raid chat.
"Wings, close in on the left and right! Chase them towards us! Hellfire, get ready!"
The first cordon, if it could be called the first, was wiped out in just a couple of minutes. To +280 level players, a bunch of level 100 vampires weren't even good for target practice, so the scouting rogues took them out themselves. Only the sergeant presented any real challenge. The level 200 warrior furiously attacked Hellfire, restoring his hit points with every attack. All 3 groups had to focus on this mob at the same time before they could send its imitator for a rest. By the way, it was just as well he didn't attack me when we were luring out the vampires that time. He wouldn't have even noticed my spirits. After the battle at the first cordon, each player got 32 gold, 24 vampire fangs, and 1 sergeant's circlet. It looked like both the fangs and the circlet dropped for each player separately, like the loot at the Dolma mine. Even though they took no part in the battle, just for being in the same group, my 3 low-level fighters gained 3 levels each. But Plinto completely forbade them to allocate their new free stat points. I didn't manage to level up, but I had only a measly 140 experience points to go. From then on, however, we ran into a problem. The second, third, and, according to my logic, 4th cordons were nowhere to be seen. The scouts found the place where the elementals were. There really were 4 of them, and they found the place from where Ash was cast, but there wasn't a single mob in sight. They retreated, leaving us only the sergeant for slaughter. Much to my disappointment, we failed to find a probable location of the Lord of the Fallen. It was as if he'd never existed. Either there was no 4th cordon, or he'd managed to hide himself really well. After assuring the others that the search for the vanished mobs would restart first thing in the morning, I told the players they were free to go home. Anyone wishing to stay could stay, while those who had business back in reality could leave. I saw little sense in entering the dark forest during the night. "Eric, how much copper do you have on you?" I asked my fighter as soon as the glade was mostly clear. Of the free players, there remained only Plinto, who continued to inflict vigorous training on my officers, Anastaria, who was energetically debating something with Do Not Punic, and Barcina, who was watching the guys being trained.
"About 30 pieces. What do you need them for?"
"Did you get as far as tin?"
"Yep. I've been saving it up for bronze."
"Consider it a failed save. I only have 18 levels to go until silver, which I must do all I can to get through."
"Damn. What am I supposed to do after tin, then?"
"Just keep up with the running. What else?"
"Plinto,
I think Eric's slacking off here. His energy's all recovered now. I spent about an hour making ingots, but unfortunately the 30 pieces of copper was only enough for +9 to smithing and 3 pieces of lapis. In an ideal world, right now, I would hop over to Annhurst, buy some copper ingots and ore, and raise my smelting to 10% and gem cutting to level 2, but where would I get a portal here? And it would cost so much money that the subdued amphibious and terrestrial wildlife inhabiting the depth of my soul would kick the dust and bite the bucket. Or the other way around. Whichever way you turn it, they wouldn't be feeling very well. Do I really need this? No. So the portal idea can be ruled out. Where can I get more copper? What if I ask Anastaria for help?
All right, I'm off. Until tomorrow.
By this point, Do Not Punic had stopped arguing with Stacy, turned into a transparent silhouette, and vanished. Me too, said my deputy. Time to go and scare my family with an unplanned visit. I finally have a chance to spend some quality time at home, and I'm not letting a chance like that slip away. Hold up, I stopped the girl. Listen, is there any way you can use some of your old connections to buy and send me some copper ingots? Or even just the ore? I really need them. Give me a sec. Anastaria opened her mailbox and started writing a letter. A couple of minutes went by, and her eyebrows shot up. She probably got a reply. So that's how it is, muttered the girl, and started to write again. 2 minutes later, there was another reply, which again did not please the girl at all, since her reaction was one capacious word. How much do you need? She finally asked. About 10 stacks. I'll get them, the girl assured me. You'll have the copper in the morning. With these words, Anastaria became transparent, and a moment later melted into thin air. After another 20 minutes, Eric, Leidy, and Klutzer's energy once again hit zero, and Plinto and Barcina left us. As soon as Do Not Punic left, the Lady Druid joined my running and jumping officers, wishing to do some leveling up in agility and stamina herself. She didn't seem to mind that intellect was the main stat for her class. It was good to level up on all fronts. Good for her. She thinks like a true mercenary, never failing to take advantage of potential gain for her own dear self. If only everyone was like her.
And now, tell us what went down.
As soon as the 3 former redhead banders got their breath back, they crowded around me.
How did you manage to get Plinto and Anastaria into the clan? And what was the real reason Elenium, Sucio, and Dookie left?
I would have never thought that a tale retold by yours truly could come out so colorful and rich in events and drama. With villains and heroes, betrayal and friendship, feelings and ice-cold logic. I didn't conceal the truth from my fighters, honestly admitting that Anastaria was with us for only 3 months, and Plinto for a year, and for a payment at that. But the way I relayed all this was really something. Mihail Demoff, a skilled spinner of tales, would surely see a worthy colleague in me.
Peace to you, brave storyteller and his listeners, said a heavy, deep voice barely a moment after I finished.
It was night in Barleona by this time, and just a few meters away from the Guardian's Glade, 2 red dots were shining in the darkness. A hostile mob. A level 200 vampire with red eyes, indicating that he presented a danger to us.
Permit me to enter the Guardian Circle.
Eric and I looked at each other. He understood as well as I did what the vampire's red eyes meant, and what would be the result of his entering the glade. respawn for us, and inglorious death for Slate.
No, thank you. We're kind of fond of staying alive, was my strained reply. To what do we owe the honor?
I cannot harm those who have become objects of interest to the Patriarch,
uttered our night guest, compelling me to take a closer look in his properties. Level 203, a vampire scout, hit points, and not a single word that the NPC standing before us was cursed. However, his red eyes indicated the opposite.
My lord wishes to speak with one of you. He would like to know the aim of your visit to his forest.
His forest? I couldn't help myself at this point. This forest has been flooded by the Fallen and their leader, while your patriarch has barricaded himself up in his castle, or wherever it is. And yet he continues to call this cursed forest his own. We came to destroy the Taint, a quest that was given to us by the Guardian. You can go and tell the Patriarch this. I was probably taking a risk in being openly rude to the messenger, but I'd run out of niceties for the day. I was too tired. I knew that NPCs had to be buttered up, but not today.
My lord has ordered that one of you be delivered to him, and I will do this, said the vampire, unperturbed. The Guardian's Glade is not out of bounds to me. Only respect for those who have managed to turn the eyes of the Fallen away from our castle and on to themselves, giving us the first respite in 10 years, has stopped me from going any further.
With these words, the vampire did something completely unexpected. He entered the glade, and nothing happened to him. He didn't start writhing in agony, no pillar of fire appeared around him, and even the Guardian continued to doze, as if nothing had happened. But the red eyes of a hostile mob.
I will meet the Patriarch.
I finally found my bearings, realizing that if the vampire didn't attack, despite being fully capable of entering the Guardian's Glade, we had nothing to fear. At least, for the moment. Later, we'll figure out who was indebted to whom and by how much. Except that Stacy, the moment she's back in the game, will kill me as sure as day.
Touch my hand.
The vampire appeared next to me in one imperceptible movement. He's so damn fast.
I am linked to the castle with a transfer portal. You will be taken there in the same manner.
The vampire forced me to look at him from a different perspective. Well, I'll be. So it looks like mobs around here aren't as simple as they may seem at a first glance. Ordinary messengers are supplied with anchored portals, which usually cost crazy money. It's a convenient thing, to be sure, but you'd have to dump so much gold on the anchor and the summoning scrolls. Yet here, we have simple scouts running around with anchored portals, like this was the norm. They are probably used as a security measure. If the Fallen were to catch such a vampire, he'd just fly off in a flash. Nice failsafe, for sure. Realizing that I didn't have much choice in this, I touched the vamp's hand, and the world around me blinked, indicating the transfer to a different location. When my vision was no longer blurry, I beheld a monumental structure in all its glory. The inner court of the Vampire Patriarch's castle. What immediately struck me was the total absence of the mist otherwise ubiquitous throughout the dark forest. There was a cobbled square, which contained a massive stone castle palace, and several small buildings, which were probably there purely for decoration. In any case, no one lived in them, because great piles of various weapons and armor blocked all the entrances.
"Our spoils of war," explained my guide after noticing my gaze. "First, they filled up the entire armory, then the barracks, and then we just started to pile them up outside. We cannot leave the weapons on the battlefield, as they will return to the fallen, nor can we use any of them ourselves, since they're cursed. So that's why they're gathered here, in these useless piles."
"Can I have a look?"
"That will depend on the result of your meeting with the Patriarch. Perhaps I won't even have to take you back. Free citizens know how to return from the Greylands, so you could be returning to the Guardian's Glade on your own. Whatever the Master commands, follow me."
My guide headed inside the castle, and I, trying to keep up, continued to take in my surroundings. High stone walls around the castle perimeter, reaching up to whatever their actual height, you couldn't see the trees beyond them. I might give them 6 or 7 meters, but there's no way to be sure. There was nothing else. The castle covered about the same area as the Guardian's Glade, but contained nothing except the 4 buildings. It looks like this was home to the wrong type of vampires. A bit too ascetic, as it were. If you'd seen any antique films, you'd think these guys love luxury, since they lived a very long time. But here, they were being downright Spartan. Vampires stood along the entire wall perimeter and kept sending arrows somewhere outside. Then the question occurred to me, where do the local fighters get their weapons and food? There was no sign of a smithy or trees from which to make arrows, for starters. Did the developers depart from the game logic in this and permit the NPCs' weapons to renew themselves and for the arrows to just pop out of the quivers? And the replenishing of the ranks of the original vampires was also begging for an explanation. They should have all been killed off in the last 10 years. Where could they be born around here? So, all in all, I had many questions, which, in all probability, would never get answered. It's a scenario. That's all there is to it.
"Greetings, traveler. What brings you to my forest?"
The Patriarch of the Vampires had a surprisingly beautiful voice. It was so, I don't even know how to describe it. Confident and kind, it made you feel that you could trust and rely on it, that all your problems had been long solved, leaving you without a care in the world. The local boss, dressed in a bright red mantle that covered him from head to foot, was sitting on a throne made of skulls, and watching me, like all other vampires I encountered here, with red eyes. His throne was truly cosmopolitan. Heads of humans, orcs, horned kobolds, if I wasn't mistaken. Almost all the races of Barleona were represented in this frightening creation by the developers. "We are on a quest from the Guardian of the Dark Forest to cleanse the forest of the taint," I replied to the elderly lord of the castle. His snow-white hair and pale skin made such a strong contrast with the bright red eyes that surrounded the Patriarch that a few times I caught myself in the process of averting my eyes. Damn, there were no buffs or debuffs, but the NPC's influence could be felt very clearly. Was it charisma? Or did he have something more interesting about him? I had to get to the bottom of this. I would also like to find out what happened to the great priest Midial and his group. I made sure I didn't forget the second quest, too. And who destroyed him? Destroyed him? Smiled the patriarch. I would have given much to destroy the sentient you just called the great priest Midial. After all, the Lord of the Fallen and Midial are one and the same.
Faster! Midial was increasingly impatient as he tried to hurry his team ahead. We have to get to Ishni before nightfall. Only she can tell us where to find the Tear of Iluna. Onwards, brothers!
Don't run your people into the ground, priest.
A blindingly bright light chased away the deepening shadows of the dark forest as the unicorn stepped out of the trees. It was the heart of the dark forest, Ishni. The expedition sent by the High Priestess froze, gazing in wonder at the flawless white skin, the resplendent horn, and huge eyes full of unearthly wisdom.
I will give you the Tear of Iluna. I have no more need of it. Take it, and carry the light with honor.
The unicorn lowered her head, and the group saw that a small chain with a drop-shaped pendant was hanging from the tip of her horn, the lost amulet of the High Priestess. Everyone sighed in relief. The expedition had ended in success, and a great reward awaited everyone upon their return. The group relaxed. Many started to smile, and Midial bent to his knees and said,
You have my thanks, O great Ishni, for helping us find the lost relic. We will be able to achieve much with its help.
Much? Priest, it seems you do not know that the Tear of Iluna is incapable of bringing light. How can the goddess's grief, her pain and loss, carry light? For centuries, the High Priestesses guarded the peoples of Bar-Leona from the effect of this amulet, and the time has now come for the new priestess to take this burden upon herself. The tear cannot be used. It can only be guarded.
I beg your pardon, O Great One, I misspoke. I will not use the tear. It is beyond my power. My innermost desire is to deliver the relic to the right place.
Midial rose up, walked over to the unicorn, and took the pendant from her. He looked at the amulet for a few moments, and then a malicious smile spread across his face.
And isn't it just my luck that the right place is right here? Garanika!
The priest suddenly shouted into empty air.
I obtained the prize that you sought! The dark forest is ready to fall at your feet!
After uttering these words, Midial tore the tear off the chain and stuck it into the ground.
Stop! You madman!
Ishni managed to utter before the world came to a halt. The priests who sprang up to stop their leader, the unicorn who lowered her head to run at the enemy, and even the wind, which previously had been hardly noticeable in the dark forest, froze in an elaborate swirl. Everything paused.
You did it!
Said a man dressed in a tailored suit who appeared next to Midial.
I have to admit, my apprentice, I started to doubt you, but you managed to live up to my hopes. From now on, I name you the Lord of the Dark Forest. Very soon it will become cursed, and you will supply me with a Who dares intrude into and desecrate the dark forest?
Although time had stopped, the projection of the oak appeared not far from Guernica and Midial. The guardian had come to defend its forest.
"You still haven't dealt with this problem?"
Guernica looked at Midial in surprise.
"Apprentice, you begin to disappoint me. How did you manage to do such a good job on the one hand, and botch it on the other so spectacularly? Prepare to be punished. You will be destroyed,"
the guardian continued with his denunciation.
"Nothing will save you, and—"
"Silence!"
A tambourine appeared in Guernica's hand. The shaman closed his eyes, and the surrounding world was shaken by several resounding bangs.
"You dare tell me—" "What? What is happening?"
shouted the guardian, as dark mist started to swirl around him. Its touch first wilted leaves, then branches began to fall off, and just a few moments later the oak vanished, having disintegrated into dust.
"Apprentice, this is your punishment. Until you destroy the patriarch of the vampires who lives in this forest, you shall have no place at my side. That is all."
Guernica looked at the bowed head of the priest, walked up to the unicorn, broke off its horn, and, after a pleased chuckle, vanished. The surrounding world moved once more, but now Midial was its master. He lifted up his hands, and, as with Guernica earlier, dark smoke started to stream out of them. In a snake-like movement, it twisted around all those still alive in the glade, including the unicorn, and lifted them above the ground.
"I appoint you sergeant," said Midial to one of the priests. "You, the lieutenant, and you, the general of the fallen. The rest will come in handy for the initiation. As for you," the priest turned to Ishni, "I have great plans for you. Argh! The damn thing burns so much!"
Midial took a small frog statuette from somewhere inside his robes and threw it to the ground.
"Useless trinket!"
"As you can see," said the patriarch, "for 10 years now Midial has been trying to return to his teacher, but without success. The Rear de Lox clan will never capitulate before the invaders."
While I was recovering from what I'd just been shown, a string of messages flashed before my eyes.
Quest: Restoration of a Holy Relic Step 2. The search for the Stone of Light completed. Reward: plus 35,000 experience, plus 500 to reputation with the Priestesses of Iluna, plus 100 to reputation with the Goddess Iluna. Level gained. Quest available. Quest: Restoration of a Holy Relic Step 3, Return of the Stone of Light. Step 3 description: The lost Stone of Light was dropped somewhere in the Dark Forest. With time, an oasis of goodness and peace has formed around it. Return the Stone of Light to the High Priestess. Requirements: reputation with Goddess Iluna greater than 0. Reputation with the Priestesses of Goddess Iluna friendly or above. Combined group level 600. Quest chain class rare. Reward for completing step 3 plus 1 level plus 500 to reputation with the Priestesses of Iluna plus 100 to reputation with Goddess Iluna. Reward for the quest chain hidden. Penalty for failing or refusing the quest, none. The quest chain will be updated for all the members of the group. Update to the Cleansing of the Dark Forest quest. Source of the taint: the tear of Iluna planted into the ground.
I can see that my words have shocked you.
The old vampire returned me back to the game.
I understand that it's hard to accept betrayal, especially from a priest, but that is the story of my forest. You will now be taken back. I've found out all that I wanted to know. I have no interest in helping you, but my warriors will not hinder you either. You will be allowed to pass through our lands unimpeded and take the Tear of Illuna out of the ground yourselves.
Then why? I started, but then fell silent. At first I wanted to know why the Patriarch's vampires wouldn't pull out the amulet themselves. But why ask a question to which I already knew the answer? The tear was probably stuck in the ground at the place where the priests were initiated into being cursed ones. This means that's where the Lord of the Fallen, who is Guernica's apprentice, will also be located. But then another question immediately arose. How could a shaman teach a priest? Formally, they deal with different entities. Although, if I remembered the words of the supreme spirits of both worlds, Guernica hasn't been using spirits for a long time now, 10 years or more. And yet, he used his tambourine when destroying the Guardian. I urgently needed ants in the panza. Thank you for your help. We will walk this path to the end. I have a request and a question. The question is simple. So that we don't spend ages roaming the dark forest, can you please tell us where Midial stuck the tear into the ground? The request is a bit more complicated. You have a lot of cursed weapons lying around your square. I am a blessed artificer and have the ability to change cursed weapons into blessed ones. I may have been slightly economical with the truth here, since I'd never actually done this, but I had to give it a go. What if it worked? At the very least, I could always take them to Beth and she could help me remake them. Can I take a few of these items, since you aren't using them? For a few minutes, the Patriarch was lost in thought. Probably his imitator was calculating possibilities and analyzing the piles of metal for anything useful. And then he answered,
I will not mark the spot where my enemy is located. The fight between us is an internal dark forest matter, not something free citizens should concern themselves with. If you want to get involved, it's your business. My fighters will not stand in your way. But don't expect any help from them either. You have to solve your own problems yourself. As for the weapons and armor, yes, we really don't have anywhere to put it. But I cannot just hand it over without knowing for sure what you will do with it. Prove to me that you are indeed a blessed artificer. You will be brought a sample. Change it. If you succeed, I will allow you to select around 10 objects. This will be my personal gift to you. If you fail, you will have to make your way back to the Guardian's Glade via the Greylands. Do you agree to my conditions?
So that's how it is. That's some twist Mr. Head Vampirello put on things. And in general, our meeting didn't seem to have come out quite right. Firstly, the Patriarch didn't appear in the list of encountered factions, so leveling up with him in reputation was a separate story. Secondly, he had no intention of helping us, and there was nothing to be done about that. Thirdly, he was about to send me for respawn, because I was no priest when it came to switching polarities. And I couldn't decline either. My reputation with the Patriarch could easily plummet, which was the last thing I needed. What to do? I agree, I answered the impossible question, mentally preparing myself for a 12-hour rest, although for me it would rush past in the blink of an eye, and at least my body would get a break from Barleona.
You will be brought one of the simple objects suitable for your profession, said the Patriarch, snapping me out of self-castigation mode. Suitable for my profession meant that I would have to work either with a ring or a neck chain, in other words, with a piece of jewelry. All I needed was an hour of time and...
Cursed Ring of Dryal. Item class, epic, unique. Minimum level, 320. Stats, plus 12,800 to intellect, plus 5,400 stamina, plus 80 energy, plus 1,400 agility, plus 1,400 strength. When casting a spell, you have a 30% chance of an instantaneous free repeat cast. 2 gemstone sockets, upgradable. The cost and level of upgrade can be confirmed with an advisor and master. Cursed Ring's special properties. When worn, minus 20 character levels. The effect is applied no more than once to any player wearing the ring. Total stat point reduction, minus 100. When placed in inventory, minus 30 to all stats, temporarily.
Its properties were quite mind-blowing. Prior to this, I thought that the most expensive and amazing items for players were those made by the Thracinians. The armor I was now wearing would be quite decent, even at level 300. But now that I'd seen the properties of a simple, as the Patriarch put it, epic ring for level 320, I realized I was wrong. Very wrong.
This is the ring of the First Lieutenant. 3 years ago, we managed to destroy him. Midial initiated a new one, but his level and experience are not the same. You have an hour, as of now.
With these words, the Patriarch froze on his throne, showing that, for the next 60 minutes, I didn't exist for him. That's fine by me. The main thing now was to figure out what could be done with this ring. After 20 minutes of fiddling with the ring, it finally dawned on me that I was unable to recreate it in the design mode. The ring constantly turned out deformed, however I tried to imagine it. Either the gem sockets were bent, or the ring itself became square, or its surface looked corroded, as if by acid. It looked like the level difference between my profession and a 300-level object was just too large. Was giving up and preparing for respawn all I could do? I would have dearly preferred to avoid that, but by the looks of it... Although, what if... I went to the shaman abilities and started to read. It's true, what they say. Everything new is just the well-forgotten past. If I couldn't use jeweler's skills, perhaps I could use my shaman skills instead? Essence of things and change of essence. Let's hope that this ring doesn't have the shield spell active on it. Revulsion. Rage, pain, fear, and again revulsion. As soon as I applied the ability to the ring, I was engulfed by a great torrent of negative feelings. I don't know how I managed not to chuck the ring and wash my hands of it there and then, but I'm pretty sure that the look of disgust on my face was reminiscent of someone who'd just fallen into a cesspit The ring wanted to be revolting, wretched, evil, and terrifying. The list could go on, but I tried to detach myself from the sensations that the capsule was trying to feed me and went back to the ring. So, are you a piece of filth, hell-bent on being that and nothing else? I see. But what if I try to force you to become a happy and harmless lump of metal? My first attempts at change of essence resulted in nothing except a headache and, most surprisingly, a nosebleed. I glanced at the patriarch, who was still sitting statue-like on his throne, and realized that he'd sensed the blood, too. His nostrils widened slightly as he inhaled its sweet scent, but the vampire himself remained motionless. There was little else to do than sit there and try to guess what was going on. Was this due to the properties of the location, which happened to be the abode of blood-loving vampires, similar to the shaman initiation cave, or was it specific to changing the essence of the ring? 40 minutes had already gone by, but I saw no clear way of solving the problem. Time to give up? What else is there left to do? Like hell I will. I'm a shaman, and no ring is gonna make me give up. Once again I closed my eyes and called up the design mode. There was black, empty space where items that I had created were sorted on their own special shelves. Kamiamia, with the note, cannot be repeated. The image of the orcs, the dwarves, the 32 players from Phoenix and the Dark Legion clans, the stone button, a ton of rings and neck chains, a good collection of crafted items for sure. Now I just needed to add another ring there, which was completely refusing to appear. What if I'm doing it all wrong? What if I shouldn't be trying to remodel this ring, but just skip the first stage and create the ring that I'm aiming to make? I am a blessed artificer, and not a cursed one, after all. Someone who makes blessed and not cursed items. So why do I need a black item on my shelves? The template of the ring appeared straight away, round and shining, molded from a single piece of metal with 2 gem sockets. I should experiment with designing such rings, as well as with the number of sockets. Why should there only be 2? The ring I created looked very similar to the one that the patriarch had given me, but no waves of light were emanating from it. If I crafted it now, I would simply get a bronze cast ring of something or other. There had to be an extra ingredient to make the ring change, but how? "Hi, come over, I need your help," I called my totem. I saw no other means of correcting the ring other than bathing it in dragon's breath. This was probably stupid, but I was out of options. I had only 10 minutes left.
"I'm here. What do you need? Is it normal for you to have a dark ring hanging in front of your face?"
Draco asked, almost breaking my concentration. It turned out that if I relaxed even a little, the ring in my imagination immediately started to melt and deform. "Take no notice. Now, here's the job. The ring must be burned. Do it, just try not to fry me as well."
"I'll be careful,"
Draco roared at me, and warm air began to blow in my face.
"Nope. It's not working."
"Accelerate."
"But..."
"Draco, I realize it will hurt, but do it."
"All right, I'll jump to level 2.
"No, if the second level won't do it, go to 3rd and 4th. Something tells me that you should jump straight to 6.
I've never gone that far. It will hurt a lot. If you don't do it, I'll be destroyed. I won't force you. It's your choice. Even if he were just an NPC. But this is Draco. I'd become a